to Where Brains Meet Beauty, hosted by Jodi Katz, founder and creative director of Base Beauty Creative Agency.
Welcome back, Where Brains Meet Beauty listeners and industry insiders. And hello to Eleni, our VP Client Success at Base Beauty.
Hi, Jodi. Great to be here with you.
Eleni, before we jump into this pod conversation, we have another fun client launch to chat about. For this one, if you've ever wondered what irresistible storytelling smells like, this was it.
I love that. So true. We are talking today about the Kaoli Oodgasm launch, and this was brought to life in Las Vegas. It was an experience that redefined what it means to feel a fragrance.
So for the Base Beauty team, our goal was to build an irresistible tease, something that would spark anticipation, surround guests in sensory storytelling, and leave a lasting impression.
We designed an immersive, shareable experience. We had some key tastemakers and special guests coming to this experience. So it was layered with sight, scent, sound, and texture. Every moment was turned into content, and every guest who was there was turned into an advocate to really build awareness and foster a community to generate EMV for our client, Kaoli.
Yeah. And this was major EMV in this program. I'm jealous that I wasn't there because the guests indulged in gourmand moments that brought the fragrance to life. So strawberry tower sculptures, chocolate fountains, even fresh cocoa pods as decoration, each element a nod to the notes of the Oodgasm fragrances.
The highlight of this experience actually was one-on-one time with Mona Katan, the founder, and we really first got a taste of working with Mona at an event in February, the launch of Fleur Majesty Rose Royale, another fragrance in the line, and it became really clear how important it is for the people at these events to spend time with Mona, and we brought to life this moment in a really immersive way, making sure that they are completely feeling and experiencing the scent as they're talking about it with Mona and getting to know Mona a bit more to really deepen that brand affinity.
Right. Our one-on-one rooms are really like world-building moments so that those one-on-ones are as immersive as possible. Mm-hmm. Okay, so why do we love this work? Because it works. So the results were as rich as the scent itself, 389% higher content output, 2x industry engagement, and an EMV versus activation spend was about 3x, which is really exciting.
Yeah, it was really incredible. When strategy meets storytelling and every detail at these events is so thoughtful and has intention, you really can create a lasting moment for your guests to think about the brand and for the people who are going to view this digitally later.
That's just what we love so much at Base Beauty, turning creative ideas into something measurable and impactful, which is a beautiful segue into our conversation today where science, creativity, and trust come together in a whole new way.
Yes, I'm excited for this conversation. This is episode 295. We have Dr. Ariel Ostad, dermatologist, cosmetic surgeon, and brand founder, and Kelsey Johnston, former head of beauty and personal care at TikTok Shop US. They are two leaders starting brands and full platforms from scratch, and they bring artistry and precision to these worlds in a beautiful way.
This is a great conversation, hearing about the beginnings of their careers, but also the inception of TikTok Shop, right? So Kelsey was one of the first people working on this project, and look at what it's become. I can't wait to see her next career move.
Yeah, there were some great stories in this episode. It was really fascinating to talk about this with both of these guests. And we heard like, here's a blank check to see how you can make this platform come to life. So it's a really like from the ground up episode.
And if you'd like to try any products from Dr. Ariel, he gave us a code for our listeners, WBMB20. So WBMB20 for 20% off your purchases on Dr. Ariel Ostad skincare.com. And that info will be in the show description.
Amazing. Let's dive in. This is episode 295 of Where Brains Meet Beauty with Dr. Ariel Ostad and Kelsey Johnston.
Welcome to Where Brains Meet Beauty. We are talking all things skin and social with Dr. Ariel Ostad, dermatologist, cosmetic surgeon, and brand founder, and Kelsey Johnston, former GM, head of beauty and personal care, TikTok Shop US. Hello, folks.
Hello.
So this is a rainy morning, a rainy Wednesday in New York City. And what we're doing here today is recording for our influence and artistry theme. And I don't know if you know this or the audience knows this, but by the end of the day, we would have recorded our 300th episode.
Ooh,
yeah, isn't that
congratulations.
Cool? So we're actually going to have a cake at the end of the day. So anybody who's going to be here will see a 300 cake. So thank you for being part of this really big moment for us. This is a career journey show, so we want to go deep down into the history of what was on your mind, your like 11, 12-year-old self. We'll start with you, Kelsey. What was your dream? What did you want to be when you grew up?
I laugh at this question because when I was in middle school, I had an English class that I took, and the first 15 minutes of class every day was to do a little free write, and there was a prompt, and you would just journal basically. And I never remembered, of course, what I wrote during those journals, but my mom, when she was moving us out of our childhood home a few years ago, found all my old journal entries from when I was a kid. And I was reading through them, and it was like, I want to be a buyer one day. And I'm like, well, in 2 decades, the world looks a little different than it did maybe in buyer land and what that was when I was in middle school. But it kind of did translate forward in a funny way. But I think if you asked my brothers, they would tell you I was brainwashed because I was a big Friends fan when I was a kid. So they were like, you're just living out Rachel Green's life and you moved to New York City and you did the whole thing. So it's been fun how it evolved. But I guess maybe I secretly manifested that in my middle school days.
Okay, middle school fashion buyer. Okay, Ariel, what about you?
So when I was 11, I quickly realized that my dreams of being a soccer player was not going to happen. I was not a good athlete. But then I've always loved fashion. I grew up with my father being a tailor, so I saw him sew clothing, and I just became enamored with fashion, fabrics. I saw him basically roll out the different fabrics to his clients and measure them and basically just literally do this beautiful custom like men's suit. So I just always wanted to be like a fashion designer. I thought I was going to be like the next Armani. And I basically, as I got older, I realized fashion is not, I honestly didn't quite want to work with my father. I wanted to like forge my own path. And I've always liked science and beauty, and that's how what led me to be a dermatologist.
So the universe really speaks to us because when we paired you together, we did not know that your childhood dreams would be the same, basically. And how odd and interesting that you're brought together, right? That your hearts as young people were in the same place. And here you are in this very like image-driven industry, right? So it's not fashion, but it's really like its closest sister, right? Being in beauty. So pretty fascinating. So let's talk about journey. We'll start with you, Kelsey. You actually pursued this path of being the next Rachel Green, right? What were the first steps in that career journey?
I did. So when I was in university, I went to the University of Florida, and so nobody was really talking about coming to New York or moving to the Northeast or anything like that. So I just cast a very wide net. I had looked at New York, I looked at Boston, I just applied online to every single thing that I could find. And eventually, what stuck was what they called the Executive Development Program path at Macy's, which at the time was Macy's.com. Macy's was not omnichannel yet. This was sort of the very beginnings of buy online, pick up in store. And I'm like, oh my God, what a cool, like, sexy space to be in, like, at the time. And I kind of fell into it, and I was a little bit worried because, you know, I had this like creative draw, I think similar to you, but it was very math heavy as well because you had to be looking into data and analyzing not just like trends and the storytelling component, but actual like data trends. And I actually learned that you can find passion and excitement in numbers as well. And I thought it was going to be a very linear path of I start as a merch assistant and then go to an assistant buyer and then a buyer and kind of go up the ladder. And as I now look back, I'm like, nothing turned out the way that I thought it would, but for all the best reasons. And I think saying yes to things I never expected to do along the way was probably the best mentality I could have chased.
Our theme today is artistry and influence. And I think we're going to hear a lot about people that reliance on data, right? Even the influencers who are the most creative, like these are data-driven pursuits, right? So I think this is going to be a theme until 5 p.m. today. So thank you for bringing it up.
Of course.
So Ariel, you didn't choose to become a fashion designer or a soccer player. How what was the path to dermatology?
So I started college truly not knowing what I wanted to do. I know I wanted to do something in the arts. And as I sort of went along, I was really influenced by my uncle, who's a physician, and I saw he had a good life, and he was really helping people. That is truly part of my identity. I very much sort of grew up believe, you know, learning the values of empathy and just being a good person. And I said, you know what, if my uncle can be a doctor, I can do it too. I think without him, I'm not sure if I would really follow that path. I would be maybe sort of fearful and scared. So I think it's always great to have a mentor and somebody who you think in real life has done it. So I chose to go to medical school by about second year of college. I was at NYU, and I basically just pursued that. I went to medical school, and as I started medical school, you sort of gradually have to choose a path of what you want to do in your specialty. And I initially wanted to be like a neurosurgeon, but it was just not really in my identity. It was just like, as much as I love the head and neck, that's my passion. So then I said, you know what, maybe I'll be like a head and neck surgeon. And it just didn't really fit my identity. And then along the way, I did a rotation in dermatology. And I just fell in love with it because it really mixed taking care of people with conditions that really psychologically affected them, affected their confidence. And it sort of was a nice marriage of really helping people as well as like beauty aspect of making their skin more clear, making them look better. And then I loved doing stuff with my hands. So I chose to be actually a surgeon in terms of handling skin cancer work and facial reconstruction. So it was not an easy path in terms of knowing what to do. But despite all the uncertainty with it, I kind of just followed with it and just sort of never gave up. And then I sort of found myself in a dermatology residency doing a subspecialty in skin cancer surgery. And then my passion has always been to sort of put the face back together and make the face look better and help people sort of feel as confident as they feel inside.
So let's take the next step in the career journey before we dig into all the themes and craziness that's happening out there in the marketplace around marketing and influence. So Kelsey, I want to understand how you went from the traditional mm-hmm. buying world, right? The things we saw in the 90s to the TikTok shop where you were most recently.
Yeah.
And why did that appeal to you at the time?
Yes. So I kind of ended up there accidentally, I think, throughout my whole journey. Again, the key theme was I just started saying yes to things and I tried to be very open and veer from the path of what I thought I could control. So it really all started when I was at Saks. I had gone over there on a buying track and they had a policy in place for the company that if you start on a buying track, you have to do a financial planning rotation and vice versa, because they really wanted well-rounded minds that understood both the art and the science of the business. So I remember calling folks in my network and being like, oh, but I don't want to leave the product. I love the buying. Like, I guess I'll just like suck it up for a year and go do it just to learn it. And I ended up staying in it for 4.5 years and realizing you actually can be creative with numbers, and learning the rigor of how to manage a P&L is actually a very important skill to have throughout your career. So I started it there and then, went on to Jet.com, Walmart from there, and ultimately went brand side. I was at Coty for a few years and then ended up at TikTok out of the blue. Kind of, I got a call from a recruiter there who actually was the one who hired me into Walmart. And he said, we're building this new solution for TikTok. It's called TikTok Shop. And we're essentially embedding e-commerce into the ecosystem. Do you want to come check it out and build it with us? And I was like, no, I really don't. But like, I'll talk to people through the interview process and see what I think. And I went through the process and I learned a lot more about what they were building. And I was like, oh my God, this thing has legs. And, you know, I've always been drawn to sort of these transformation stories or disruptors kind of within larger industry or larger organizations. And this was one where I'm like, it's not just building a business, it's actually moving a market and it's changing a mindset and a shopping behavior. And something that's obviously very well proven out in China and other markets can now come to the US, and to have a stamp on that and a hand in that is really exciting.
So Kelsey, let's go to the moment where the recruiter called you. Why was your instinct to be like, nah, I don't want this?
On a personal level, I was getting married that year. I had a really good gig at Coty. I was like, I want to do this 9-to-5. Like, it's really easy. And I wasn't really looking to shake things up at the time. And I think throughout your career, there's moments where you're like, I want to lean into stability. And there's moments where you're like, I want to lean into change. And I knew that probably within the next year or two after getting married, I was going to want to, you know, get uncomfortable again and start learning new skills. But at that moment, I was like, I am on the stability train and I want to keep doing this routine. But I'm glad I took the jump. And I ended up starting a new job, getting married and going on a honeymoon all within like 8 weeks, I think, of how it all went. But I wouldn't change a thing. I think I'm energized by a little bit of healthy chaos. So it ended up being a great decision.
I want to come back to the adventure that you chose to jump on at TikTok, but let's go back to you, Ariel. You have your brew practice, but you started a brand too. So this is a completely different adventure. Why did you choose to do this?
I love creativity. I love contribution. I love to sort of have an impact in the world. And I thought one way that I could do that is to just utilize my scientific knowledge of ingredients, skincare, and sort of be able to do things differently. I feel like there are a lot of brands out there maybe relying on packaging, sort of labels, branding, and maybe the actual ingredients aren't as effective as they can be. So I'm science guy as well. I read all the journals. I see all the products that basically are available. And I'm also an entrepreneur, and I really wanted to sort of mix the sort of the entrepreneurship along with being able to like make an impact. And so therefore I said, you know what, let me create this. I wanted to create something that's scalable, and just truly the entrepreneurship aspect of it really drove me. I love doing that and making an impact. So therefore, I just kind of came up with some medical grade ingredients that I thought are not quite out there, and basically worked with a chemist to create this. I was certainly afraid. I was scared. I was like, who am I to be able to do this in this huge industry of skincare? How am I going to be able to compete with these giant brands? And I feel like, you know, as Kelsey said, you just kind of like go with it, and it's scary. And there are times where you kind of slow down. You're like, oh, I'm not sure if this is going to really work out. And I want to say like COVID hit, and I was at home for like 3-4 months. And luckily, my mindset was in a really good state, and it allowed me to really put all my energy and focus into it. Because other than that, you know, you get so caught up with work on a daily basis, it's really hard to focus on your passion. And, you know, obviously, you know, married, having children, and that also sort of impacts things. But I utilized that time to really create this. So that's how it all came about.
Okay, so you both embarked on these big adventures, maybe adventures you didn't see coming, like 5 or 10 years back. I feel like I'm on an adventure in running Beast Beauty. It's been 18 years. And on the hard days, I think to myself, like, what else would I be doing with my time? Because if I didn't have this, I'd be sitting on the couch snacking and watching TV. So it's good that I have something to keep me very busy. But I have shed some tears. Like, this is, like, not easy. So if we can pick out a moment, we'll start with you, Kelsey. Like, you're at TikTok shop. What's a day where you're crying? Like, what was going on?
I don't know if this is a good thing or a bad thing, but I think I got very good at compartmentalizing while I was working there because the show must go on. But I think just like in a vacuum, an example of what it looked like, you know, I'm based in New York. I live in New York City. We have a very robust headquarters in LA with the big creator ecosystem that exists on TikTok. And for about a week every month, I was on a plane back and forth to LA. So, you know, you're up in the morning, you're in what is now a 2-hour car to JFK. You know, you're flying across the country, you're landing, your full day of meetings, you are jamming a week with people, clients, internal meetings, and everything in between, and then hopping on a red eye on the way home because you want to see your family and do everything you want to do on the weekends as well. So I think just the amount of days that existed where I woke up and I was like, okay, just one foot in front of the other, one step at a time. And you almost can't even get there of let me think about my week. You just think about let me get through the next meeting or the next presentation or whatever that looks like. And then, you know, I always used to joke after coming home from college, it's like you never get sick when you're in college, but then after finals week, you come home and you're like totally leveled because your immune system just crashes. I think, again, there's seasons of sprinting and resting. Mm-hmm. And I really believe the experience at TikTok was a season of sprinting. Mm-hmm. And, you know, like Ariel was saying, it's really hard to think about how to help people or what's next for you or what your passions are when you're just in the hamster wheel all the time. So I think for everybody listening, it's so much easier said than done, but finding out how you can carve space for free thought and just, you know, discovering your own passions in whatever way that works for you, it's super important, staying energized.
Ariel, have you shed any tears in this process?
Oh my God, so many. And it doesn't stop. It really doesn't. And, you know, I've been in practice for 29 years. And along the way, there's so many different steps that just kind of create challenges for you from starting a practice. Like in a place like New York City, you're going to say, how am I going to be able to compete with these well-established names, doctors, surgeons? And so it's easy to say, you know what, this is not for me. I'm not cut out to do this. So it really starts with a mindset. And so, and that mindset vacillates. There are days that basically you're faced with challenges of running an office, dealing with employees, dealing with patients. And there's challenges that just come out of the blue that you're not expecting. So that doesn't really stop. It really doesn't. So, and then sometimes, you know, you get so caught up with your work, and then you realize, oh my God, I've made so many sacrifices personally, you know, with my relationship, my children. So it's not easy. It's really, there's so much pressures coming at you, and you can imagine New York City is not an easy thing. So it's a decision you make, and there are days that I question, do I want to work this hard? Do I really, did I do the right thing? But then I try to kind of balance it all and try to do the best I can.
I liked how you mentioned, Kelsey, the seasons. So maybe sometimes a whole day feels like different seasons, right? There's like the getting it together first thing in the morning to like make that list of like what needs to be done. And then maybe there is a lull, right? I can actually eat lunch, yeah. Right? But I want to just talk about some tactics of dealing with like what you're both talking about, because we're ambitious people. I mean, I think that's sort of like the problem, right? We don't want to sit still. We want to be doing new things, and maybe sitting, slowing down is just really not an option for how we're built. So this has been a very busy week or last week. So I actually like feel my heart racing, like, you know, kind of jumping out of my chest. And I have to like tell myself in my head, I am capable. I am confident. You know, I'm calm, like convincing myself to be calm, to like kind of chill myself out. And then the other tactic I've been using is lying on the floor up against the wall and putting my legs up. And just like Great. Letting my arms stretch out and breathing. So those are two things that I've been using lately. Kelsey, like what are some of your tricks for just like getting a little bit of ease and calm in your body?
Yeah, this is going to sound maybe kind of messy, but you don't always have a place to lie down and put your legs up. Mm-hmm. I'm a big fan of legs up on the wall, mm-hmm. by the way. But what I would do if it was before going into a big meeting or presentation is I would find a bathroom stall somewhere, mm-hmm. and just do box breathing. Mm-hmm. And for those who don't know, it's like you breathe in for four, like you hold for four, you let out for four, and you just kind of focus on that for as long as it takes for you to feel like you're calm. And that's maybe one tool in a toolbox of other things, but you can take it with you and it doesn't take very long.
Mm-hmm. Ariel?
Along the same note, I very much believe in meditation. Mm-hmm. As a physician, you know, you're very you think very scientific, and the idea of meditation initially was like a poo-poo thing for me. It was like, how's that going to help? But I feel like you all said, being able to calm my mind and basically like activate my parasympathetic system. So meditation, I went on a journey, I started reading and learning about meditation, I attended some meditation retreats. So for me, it's about starting my morning every morning with just doing like a 10-minute meditation, being able to like utilize affirmations that really help my day, that I'm capable, I'm gonna do this, I'm gonna have a beautiful day. I very much believe in mental imagery. Mm-hmm. I very much believe in visualization. I can actually visualize my day, and don't ask me, but it honestly works. Somehow it works, because I think if you can kind of like bring your unconscious to the surface and sort of have sort of a positive mental attitude, mindset, all of those things really help. So I just try to start my day. I try not to look at the news. I try to push out all negativity. I try to really like just inspire myself.
I deleted my social media apps off my phone.
That's not easy. So well done.
Yeah. I mean, I have to like reload it for a work thing, but then I actually do delete it, because yeah. I'll just like, yeah, see these things that don't make me, they make me feel not good. Mm-hmm. And then I have to like control myself on like not pressing the news button. Yeah. Right. So that's been a little harder, but sometimes ignorance is bliss. Yeah. Right. Okay. Let's shift gears a little bit into this theme, artistry and influence. So Ariel, we'll start with you. You literally are an artist, right? I consider dermatologists artists. How does artistry come to life for you every day in your practice and through the product?
Sure. I would say from a standpoint of my practice, I've considered the face kind of my canvas. So it's really being able to, in subtle ways, enhance people's features. I deal with a lot of problems with aging and the challenges that come with aging psychologically. So I basically know the facial anatomy really well. I put a lot of effort in mastering that. And when I look at someone's face, it's all about making them look better, not obviously overfilled, overdone. So that really is something I enjoy. It's extremely fulfilling for me. Artistry also happens when someone presents with a skin cancer, and unfortunately, let's say you have to remove a portion of their nose, lip, eyelid, ear, and being able to reconstruct that. I love that artistry. For me, it's about putting things back together, making them look as good as it was prior. So that's how it sort of works for me.
And we're now in a world of like dermatologist influencers, right? Mm-hmm. On TikTok and other platforms. Do you consider yourself one of those?
I don't know if I'm an influencer. I don't have, to be honest with you, quite the personality of being like really kind of like out there and being a showman, but mm-hmm. I try to do it through education. Mm-hmm. I try to do it with humility. So for me, it's about trust. It's about gaining the people's trust. So, and I feel like I attract a certain personality into my practice because of that. So for me, it's same thing, trying to make a difference in a genuine way, do it in a way. Trust is critical for me. Mm-hmm. And I feel like when you establish that trust, patients are not disappointed. Because mm-hmm. in this world out there, there's people quickly can get disappointed because they feel they've been taken advantage of. So that's a big important aspect for me.
Kelsey, let's talk about influence, right? You were literally in the room, right, of the influence of TikTok. It's kind of insane what it's become, right, and the way it's shaped our culture. Mm-hmm. Talk to us about what it was like to be in the middle of that and like some of the most exciting aspects of that.
Definitely. So when I joined TikTok in 2023, and we were still in our beta phase for TikTok Shop. I think I was the first 50 employee and to build that solution in the U.S. And we quite literally took the business from $0 and zero partners when I walked in the door to what is now over a $1 billion business for beauty and personal care, which is absolutely bonkers.
And that's 2 years.
In 2 years, yeah. Which is amazing. And you think about in the traditional, again, like traditional retail mindset of what that would mean to do that, you know, in the 90s or even, you know, 5 years ago, you just didn't get that scale that quickly. And I think the key thing that has been a big success driver to TikTok has been the ability for brands to kind of let go and let other people democratize their brand for them. And I love that you mentioned trust, because I think we're in a world now where we're shifting away from traditional advertising. People don't trust it. They see even, you know, sponsored search results on Google mm-hmm. and they're ignoring it and they're scrolling and organic is more important than ever. So as you have this whole creator ecosystem, not only on TikTok, but also off of it, starting conversations, like people trust those people. They think they're their friends and they think they're, you know, having their coffee with them in the morning and they want to, you know, trust what they're saying and buy into it. So I think it's been the biggest driver, but also the biggest hindrance for a lot of brands, because the ones who have been the most successful have said, let me just give my product to these people and these communities and let them prove it out for me. I don't need to say anything. And, you know, if there's some bad stuff that comes along the way, good, because that helps with the authenticity of the brand. And not everyone will like everything. But I think the brands that sort of struggle are the ones that say, we need to control the narrative. We're only going to talk to these 50 creators, and here's the script they must use. And then you take the artistry out of it, right? Because creators are creating by definition. So I think, you know, it's definitely changing the business world and driving the business world in a new way. And I mean, my like spidey senses of what I think will happen in the future, especially with the introduction of AI and just automating so many things, I think traditional kind of like retail category management, all of that will be automated and fall away. And the future of this business is really community management. And the people sitting at brands and sitting in organizations are not just managing communities of creators, but also their own communities. Because traditionally, we think of it as like, you're a brand, you manage your customers, but now you have a second customer, which is your creators. Mm-hmm. And that's a very important cohort to consider too.
You mentioned community management. I'm sure, yeah. ears perked up from my team in the room. You know, we've always been at Beast Beauty really focused on like the purchaser is a real human, mm-hmm. right? Not a robot or a bot, right? So to actually build a real human relationship, it's a human to human structure, right? So, you know, we were talking about AI ahead of sitting down together. How do you think brands are going to be building real communities to motivate a real human on the other side of the conversation to take action?
Yeah. I mean, I'm not trying to take this into a doom and gloom direction, but you read a lot about AI, and you know, there's a former Google executive who sat down recently and said, if not approached correctly, AI is going to be the downfall of humanity. Again, like, let's not get dramatic here. But I think that the key takeaway for me from that conversation was, it will be the downfall of humanity if we lean away from our human components of ourselves. So it's leaning into creativity more than ever. It's leaning into community more than ever. And it's making sure that you're leveraging AI for the things that you want to automate for efficiency's sake in your business, so you're not, you know, wasting money. But you're now putting human manpower into people again. Mm-hmm. And to me, that's really exciting, because I've sat in many rooms with many creators. And this one example I continue to share was a roundtable in LA a few years ago. And the creators were talking about brand ambassadorships and disagreements that they had with different partners. And they're like, you know, we love getting samples of things. We love creating content, but like, we want to go to coffee with people. We want to go to dinners, because I'm sitting in my living room with my tripod and my ring light, and it's really isolating and it's super lonely. So I think we also have to remember, in this world of automated and digital technologies, like, you still have people who crave connection behind the scenes. So however we can keep those conversations going in real life as well, it's going to be huge.
That's a helpful segue to what I wanted to mention next, which is the reading we're doing on the loneliness epidemic, right? So I'm curious, Ariel, are you seeing, like, in your practice, people coming to you acting more lonely, talking more lonely, now that we're in this sort of digital world where we kind of are alone in our living rooms?
Yeah, absolutely. First of all, I love what you said about connection. And very much, I can't tell you how much anxiety and depression I see on a daily basis. And whether it affects them with a medical skin condition, whether it affects them with their aging process. So I do believe that, couple that with people's struggles in personally, along with, you know, obviously collectively what we see happening in the world, I see a tremendous amount of anxiety on a daily basis. And so I do think that when people like can relate to me and see that I'm actually there and I'm listening to them, because maybe their experience has been that they've sort of failed the connection with other people, it establishes that ability for them to realize that there are good people out there that really do pay attention to them. So yeah, the loneliness epidemic is huge. And to be quite frank with you, you know, I have three kids and I see it with my kids with school as well, obviously, you know, with social media, and it's all great that they're stimulated. But even in the young population, people more and more are interacting through the phone. And so, yeah, I do see that a lot.
This is when I will tell everyone in the room that I, when my kids were younger, I gave them really, really strict rules around the phone and social media. And I have two teens who actually move through the world, like, with their phone, their nose not in their phone all the time. And I'm really proud of that.
Yeah,
this is like, you know, I had to endure a lot of like, why mom, right? Yeah. But I see it every day, right, with adults, right? How we get sucked into this, how it makes us feel not good. So I didn't want to let my kids walk into that world too early, right? They're going to as adults, right? I won't have, you know, sway over that as adults, but in those middle school years, I was really strict, and I'm still strict. Like, my son is 18, but he's not allowed to have that phone in his room at night. Like, it has to be charged downstairs. So, you know, if he chooses to take those paths forward when he leaves for college, you know, we'll find out. But that's why I try to also have self-control in these spaces, because I want to feel better every day. And getting sucked into these worlds that are, you know, kind of a fantasy world aren't always helpful for me.
I think that's wonderful that you can do that and to create that strict.
How old are your kids, Ariel?
With tough love. So my kids are 20, 18, and 10.
The ship has sailed. Oh, the 10-year-olds, there's still hope there.
Yeah, yeah. Uh-huh. And it's definitely challenging. It for sure requires strict. And to be honest with you, I am not so great at it as you are. But I think it's important to balance that. Absolutely.
I can email you my list of rules. They're on the refrigerator on a magnet. And now even if like my son is like going to fold laundry, he'll ask me for permission. Can I bring my phone in my room so I can listen to like whatever, you know, podcasts or something while I fold laundry. So it's, they're very conscientious about it.
But it sounds like you're modeling it as well, which is really important. Because, so I have an 8-month-old daughter and she, if I have my way, she will never get a cell phone, but that's not the way that generation is going to go. But I've read a lot of studies and they say even from, you know, like infant toddler age, they crave your attention as a parent. And if you have your face in the phone the whole time, like there are a lot of long-term repercussions. So it's our mentality and our behavior too, not just with rules.
Yes. Because when we're with another human, we want to feel connection with the other human. So if we, any of us have a spouse or a partner who has their nose in their phone and we're trying to have a conversation, you know how like isolating and like lonely that feels even in the moment, even if it's just like about like, let's pick a restaurant for dinner tonight, or what are we going to do tomorrow? We have to go to the food store, even if it's a simple basic stuff. I mean, certainly my daughter last week and this week said to me like, stop working. You know, she knew that I was working a lot and I had a lot to do, but she also wanted to, we're watching Tabitha's Salon Takeover. Do you remember this show? I'm like, yes. Do we have any questions? It is so good. I highly recommend rewatching it. Tabitha is amazing. So we're watching this together and she's like telling me like, I want your attention now. I want this time with you. So we work hard at it. Okay, that took us a little off topic. So let's get back to influence. You know, certainly you were just a moment ago in the center of it all. And Dr. Ariel, are you on TikTok Shop or using this tool for your brands?
I'm not. I actually met Kelsey and we're going to do that. I'm excited.
Okay, so wow, you just helped your peers back at TikTok.
Yeah, you did, yes.
So you walked away from the world of TikTok, which is really the center of it all right now. Where are you moving to create influence?
Yes. So I can't share too much yet. But what I will share is I think there's a few signals I'm observing in the market right now. One, like we talked about, there is this creator community model that is very new to everybody. And the way that a D2C brand would approach that model versus a large CPG company would approach that model versus maybe a small business would approach that model, it looks very different for everyone. And so many people call me and they're just like, I need to do TikTok. And I'm like, what specifically do you want to do on TikTok, right? And people don't know. So I think one, there's a big market opportunity for coaching people up on this community management model. Second, I think the whole digital infrastructure that's going to be emerging in the next few years is going to be largely based on Shopify. So we think about creator and community, we think about connected ecosystems, embedded commerce is going to be everywhere. So, you know, TikTok is the one who's doing it best and biggest right now, but you're seeing signals at Pinterest, you're seeing signals at YouTube, you're seeing all of these companies kind of blending now the social world and the commerce world. And I think that Shopify is the best poised right now to just play in all of them because it easily integrates. And then I think the third is AI, right, which is terrifying but exciting at the same time. And in the last few weeks, they announced that there's now going to be shoppable capabilities in ChatGPT and all these chatbots, but they are indexing largely Shopify information and crawling what they have on the web. But there's not really yet a very clear playbook of what SEO is going to be for AI, which they're now calling AIO, and how brands can optimize for that. So all of that kind of pulled together, there's an opportunity for digital support for brands, and I'm keen to build that and help them figure it out along the way.
And Ariel, what are your hopes for your artistry? Like, what do you see for yourself in the future?
What I see in my future is a combination of both, like from a work standpoint, being able to just get the message out about proper skincare that's out there, to be able to really educate people that not all products out there are what they're supposed to be doing, and really educating people about some innovative like technologies that are coming out, whether it's peptides, whether it's exosomes, whether it's like, you know, using your own regenerative power of your own blood, like what we call platelet-rich plasma, and really trying to incorporate that in terms of educating people about some great sort of products that are out there. And for me, it's about just also from my standpoint, helping people to really also see their beauty as who they are, and not get a little bit overly caught up with the culture out there that's basically driving people to sort of look like the person next door.
My last question before we get to our final part of the show, which is a game, is about the comments section. So Ariel, do you read the comments section, and are you able to navigate it, the emotions about the comment section?
Yeah, I definitely do. I'm fascinated to hear what people say, and I do my best to read it. I also have staff that basically tells me if I'm not able to, I tell them to check. So I very much want to engage, and I want to basically be very much involved in what people are thinking, saying. I do value that a lot.
And Kelsey, what would your advice be to an influencer? How invested should they be in the comments section?
I think it depends, right? Like, you never want to give too much energy to a silent voice on the internet of somebody who you don't know and have never met. But I think where it's really powerful, again, I'm very big on like knowledge is power, art and science, data and, you know, creation and all of that. And I think there's a lot of creators that as they're creating their brand, or if they're creating an actual brand, like how you have, that information can sometimes help guide product development. It can sometimes guide how you go to market, who you're talking to as part of your audience and your community. So I think with a grain of salt, but also you want to foster, I think for your own brand, however you show up, whatever that means for you, a happy and accepting place. And I tend to see, for the most part, that people are inherently good. And if they see good, they meet them with good back. So hopefully we can just all give each other a little bit more of that on the internet.
Love that. Well, now we're going to move on to the final phase of our show, which is a game. You both told us that you're looking for that perfect work-life balance, right? So we're going to play a game guessing whether an activity is a real New York City-based like wellness experience, and we're going to call that one Zen, or a fake, made-up, or exaggerated concept. We'll call that hype. Okay, so Natasha does a lot of research to make these games really fun, so she found some really interesting things. So it's just a guessing game, right?
Great.
We'll direct the first one to you, Kelsey. Do you think sunrise, silent disco yoga on a Brooklyn rooftop is Zen or hype?
It's Zen in the fact that it's real, but I don't think I would say
that. Ariel, daily breathwork sessions in a salt cave beneath Times Square. Do you think that's Zen or hype?
I would say that's Zen.
Yeah, it really exists. It's called the Breathe Salt Rooms.
Can you find Zen in Times Square? That's like a...
Well, it's beneath Times Square.
Okay, yeah, exactly.
Kelsey, next one. Candlelit journaling at a laundromat cafe in the East Village. Do you think this is Zen or hype?
I want to say hype, but I feel like someone's done this.
It's fake. but it sounds like somebody probably did do it, right? Okay, let's complain. These are funny. Ariel, remote work in hammock suspended over the Hudson at Little Island. Do you think that this is Zen, meaning real, or hype, meaning fake?
I would say that's Zen.
It sounds like a good idea, but it's a hype.
Oh, wow.
So, Kelsey, career coaching with a cold plunge therapy in Soho, is this Zen or hype?
Definitely Zen.
It's Zen.
Yeah. So I'm like, some creator's doing that somewhere for sure.
So at Othership... Are you familiar with Othership?
They're, sure.
Have you guys heard of Othership? It sounds really interesting. And Remedy Place. Okay. Ariel, this is a grind and chant. It's a coffee-fueled meditation circle in Midtown. Do you think this is hype or Zen?
I mean, I would say it's probably been done, so I would say it's probably Zen.
Okay, well, Natasha said it's made up, but someone's going to do it now.
No.
Okay.
Okay, last round, Kelsey. Full moon cacao ceremonies in Prospect Park. Is this Zen or is this hype?
Oh, Prospect Park. This could go either way. Let's go hype.
It's Zen. It happens monthly in the spring and summer. Ariel, crystals and cocktails night at the Met Cloisters. Is this Zen or hype?
Sounds real to me. I would say Zen.
Yeah, but it's hype. But we should invent this. Yeah, crystals and cocktails. Okay, last one. Kelsey, you got this one. Psychedelic breathwork and drumming circles in Bushwick.
Oh my gosh, that's 100% got to be Zen.
It is Zen.
Oh, yeah, God.
Natasha's note here is that Bushwick always delivers.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much. This is such a fun conversation. Thank you to everybody listening.
Thank you so much. Thank you.
Thanks for listening to Where Brains Meet Beauty with Jodi Katz. Tune in again for more authentic conversations with beauty leaders.